Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning and welcome to The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Kai Wright, an editor at The Nation magazine, and I'm sitting in for Brian again today. Thanks for having me. Over the last 6 years, congressional Republicans have forced dozens of votes on bills that sought in one way or another to repeal or undermine the Affordable Care Act. That's to say nothing of the court challenges going all the way to the Supreme Court. Well, the day they have dreamed of is finally here. Yesterday, Senate Republicans took the first step in their process to get rid of the law. Now, this has already been an interminably long debate going all the way back to the mythical death panels of 2009. Nonetheless, Republicans have proposed a long, slow process for achieving their signature political goal, and Democrats have vowed to drag it out even more. Yesterday's step was truly just the opening bell. Here's how it's supposed to work. Republicans hope to get around Democratic opposition by gutting the law via the budget process. That's because budget bills need only a simple majority to pass. No need to go find 8 Democratic votes. So the budget resolution that they introduced yesterday starts that process. And over the coming year, we think, it's unclear yet, they'll figure out how exactly to replace the law. And then somewhere down the line, maybe up to 3 years, they say, a full repeal will take effect. The point of all this, of course, is to avoid the political horror show of too quickly kicking millions of people off of their insurance. But as we all enter this latest phase of the health reform wars, what's striking to me, at least, is just how little we have heard from those very people, the patients, the millions of people with very real stuff at stake here. We've talked about the politics and the insurance markets and the ideologies, but what about the care itself? How has Obamacare changed the healthcare experience for patients? And where are the voices of those patients in the debate over the current law and whatever will ultimately replace it? So that's what we're going to talk about today, the patients and their care, and we want to hear from you. Have you sought care since the law took effect? Has it changed your experience with your healthcare provider, improved it, worsened it, whichever? Give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Are you a care provider, a doctor, a nurse, a therapist? Has the Affordable Care Act changed how you deal with your patients? The actual care that you provide is what we're asking about. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Here to join the conversation is New York Times reporter Abby Goodenough, who has co-authored a really useful story about the Affordable Care Act, which was published on Monday as part of the Times' series on the Obama era. Welcome, Abby.
Hi.
So you spent a week shadowing doctors in the IU health system in Indiana. So set this up for us. What did you go looking for and why the IU health system?
Well, we wanted to look at some of the ways Obama has helped change healthcare that have gotten less attention than all the insurance coverage gains under the Affordable Care Act, which are obviously huge, and we wanted to look at those too. But this stuff has more flown under the radar, even though it's affecting many of us, you know, every time we go to the doctor now. So we wanted to go to a big hospital system. We thought going somewhere in the middle of the country would be interesting. We thought going to a red state would be interesting. At that point, I'm not sure. I guess Mike Pence had just been, had become the vice presidential nominee. So that made it a better story for us, I guess.
Mike Pence is the governor of Indiana.
Right. So Mike Pence was one of the handful of Republican governors who opted to go ahead and expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, which the law allowed and which Obama hoped every state would do. But when the Supreme Court made it optional, most Republican states opted out. His, however, did not. So we also wanted to see what a big hospital system in his state, how it would have benefited from Medicaid expansion and, you know, talk to some of the patients who had benefited as well.
And so this conversation can get pretty wonky and, you know, necessarily so.
Because, very quickly.
And it should, because part of our problem is how readily we've reduced health reform to slogans and partisan jockeying. But I'll try to keep us clear. And essentially, if I get this right, you're focused on all the ways in which Obamacare is purposefully disruptive, to use Silicon Valley's language. It's meant to encourage hospitals, in particular, these large hospital systems, to be innovative in how they provide care.
And to do things differently in both in providing care and then how they get paid for providing that care, which is a huge piece of it too. Because as we all know, healthcare costs have been, you know, a big, huge chunk of the American economy, and everybody's always looking for ways to slow down the growth of those costs. So Obama really, this was a big priority for him to try to experiment during his two terms with some ways to slow down healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm. And that's particularly about moving away from what's called a fee-for-service model, right?
Right. This is where we immediately start getting into the
Well, we got to do it. We got to do it.
I know. That's just my job.
The idea is that Medicare had always paid for
every single procedure, every single scan a patient gets, every single lab test, every single doctor's appointment they walk into, you get doctors and hospitals get a separate fee for. And the idea under some of these newer models is to start paying, for Medicare to start paying a big lump sum for the overall care of each patient, and including all of this stuff in it. And if the care ends up costing more than that amount that was doled out, the hospital or the doctor can lose some money in the end.
Mm-hmm. And again, listeners, we want to hear from you about how all of this that we're talking about, these wonky changes, how they have shown up in your actual healthcare. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Less interested in your political opinions about the law, more interested in what was your experience with healthcare since we've changed this system.
One thing that's interesting about this, what we call the delivery system reform, another eye-glazing term, is that, you know, a lot of patients may not even kind of realize it's happening, or things may feel a little different in their doctor's appointments, but it's not necessarily super obvious, at least not yet. So it would be interesting to see if anybody has noticed a difference in how their healthcare is being provided last couple of years.
Well, you show some of those things in your article, at least at IU Health.
Right. Now, a lot of this stuff is for people who the hospitals and the doctors are worried are going to cost them a lot more than that set lump sum that Medicare or whoever is paying them if they're not careful. These are people like a guy in my story who was overweight. His blood pressure was out of control. His diabetes was out of control. And he wasn't doing much about it. He had gone completely off the program. So IU Health had to scramble to try to bring in as many tools as they could to get this guy back on the program. Mm. And that was one of the scenes in our article, the efforts that they can make now to do that.
We're going to talk more about what's in your article. I want to get some of the callers that we do have on air here. So Catherine in Brooklyn, who I believe is a doctor. Catherine, how are you?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, indeed.
Hi. Prior to Donald Trump's election, I worked with a nonprofit with Global Disaster Relief. But after his election, I realized that the Affordable Care Act was going to be axed soon, and that many aspects of healthcare that people widely consider to be extraneous, like pain management, was going to be put by the wayside. I'm sure that people are going to be able to come to emergency rooms for heart attacks, for intestinal blockage, but we need to consider the days lost from work due to aspects related to pain, and that's why I started Integrated Relief. So I just want to put that out on the table, talking about what we're going to do to deal with things that are considered to be not a priority for minorities. For example, pain isn't treated equally for women and minorities as it is for men and people who are Caucasian. How are we going to allow for that if the ACA gets dissolved? Because the ACA really does act as a leveling board by introducing preventative care for all.
Thank you for that, Catherine. Abby, I think you touch on something similar to this in your piece. Help me understand that one of the things that IU Health System was doing was sort of putting together these teams of care providers to think about all the stuff beyond just the medicine. Explain that.
They call it team-based care, and this is something that hospital and health systems all over the country are working toward now. Instead of just having a doctor walk into the exam room and talk to you for a few minutes and check you out and give you that physical, the doctor's office may also have a dietitian to talk to you about how you need to eat better to control your diabetes. They may have a nurse practitioner helping the doctor with the less acute cases that day. They may have what IU and others are calling a care coordinator to just make sure that all of the aspects of the care that you need are coming together and that you're getting what you need, keeping in touch with you by phone to make sure you're keeping up on your prescriptions, that you're getting to the gym, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the doctor taking care of you anymore. Psychologists, too, are increasingly popping up in primary care offices around the country and playing some sort of role, or social workers with the mental health aspect of primary care, which is huge.
And this is kind of speaks to one of the core divides, core ideological divides, I guess, in healthcare reform, right, is this idea of how much the system should deal with what is called, quote, social determinants of health, things
right.
that go beyond just the medicine. And the law is set up to encourage that, or is it just that how is the law set up to encourage that?
I think the law is set up to encourage that and other sorts of experiments that Medicare and Medicaid are taking on to try to improve health outcomes or trying to encourage that. I think that it's hard for a lot of healthcare providers, doctors, because so much is out of their control. The guy in my story, Willie Johnson, when he went home, there's only so much the doctor could do to make sure he didn't continue drinking soda like he said he was doing, or not go to the gym or not use his sleep apnea machine. But if you have a care coordinator checking in on somebody like that, once a week or twice a week, and a dietitian, and you know, maybe even providing a gym membership through their health insurance plan, maybe your chances go up. And I think a lot of healthcare systems are realizing that to keep people healthy and out of the hospital, which is increasingly the goal, you got to worry about the social determinants of health. But it's very tricky.
Because it requires spending new money on those things, which is what Medicare will now do under
Obamacare. Right. But the idea is if you're spending money on all of those things, you're spending less money on inpatient care because people with out-of-control diabetes won't suddenly end up with kidney failure and be in the hospital for a long time or eventually need dialysis or something that's going to be far more expensive than these preventive-type measures on the front end.
Let's go to Rita in Northport, Long Island, who I believe is, in fact, a dietitian.
Yes. Hi. I'm a dietitian in private practice. The Affordable Care Act has made major changes in the care that I can provide to patients because it's usually unlimited visits. There's no copay. And I can see people frequently with diabetes, with heart disease, et cetera. In the end, it not only improves their health, but it saves money for the insurance companies. And I'm talking about the private insurance companies now. Medicare in this state frequently with diabetes.
Rita, are you there? Sorry,
yes.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, did you hear anything that I said?
Yeah, we were hearing you. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Medicare hasn't changed in this state. They only cover diabetes and kidney disease, and they limit it to 3 visits per year. So the ACA has not affected that, but I'm talking about private insurance companies, and it's been wonderful for my patients.
Because you've been able to provide this kind of extra stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, are those patients getting referred to you by primary care doctors? Is that
mostly
how it works?
Yes, and self-referrals also, but a lot of the doctors in the area refer to me.
That's great.
And Abby, you have a sense that is a consequence of the incentives in the law for the doctors.
Well, it's not necessarily a consequence of the law singularly. I think this sort of stuff was already sort of in motion. Smart health systems were doing it before the Affordable Care Act, but certainly not everybody was. And I think if you're going to give people health insurance and encourage them to use healthcare more, you also want to encourage them to stay as healthy as possible, if you have, especially if you have cost in mind. So adding as much as you can on the preventive end to keep people healthy and out of the hospital was definitely a goal of the law.
Yeah. Let's go to Bernadette in Queens. Bernadette, how you doing? Bernadette, are you there? Okay, well, we're going to we'll come back. How about Mike in Brooklyn?
Yeah, hello.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, good. Yeah, I'm a small business owner. I've been running a business for 20 years. And I'd say the positive thing about Obamacare is it's forced everyone to actually buy into the healthcare system, because for probably half of those 20 years, we didn't have healthcare. And the idea of a tax penalty is certainly a good incentive. But on the negative side, you know, we pay at least $600 a month per person just for basic health care. And, you know, I'm one of those people who pays and never goes to the doctor. And, you know, the last time, the last 2 years, we've been kicked off our health care plan twice by changes that we couldn't even understand that, you know, come through groups like Freelancers Union. And the one time I tried to see a doctor, you know, you logged on to, I think I was using Oscar, and I couldn't get an appointment within 30 days. So yeah. It's, you know, I'm a full supporter of Obama. I'm a Democrat. I think he was completely stymied by the Republicans. But, you know, there's this new system that's in place is just not working.
And, Mike, to clarify, you said you were kicked off your insurance a couple of times. These were plans you had bought through the marketplace?
Yeah, well, so it's extremely confusing. I mean, you try to go to the marketplace, and what you get is not a lot of options. And so we went to Freelancers Union, which is, I guess, a consolidator, and they offer a few plans. And last year, in the middle of the plans in October, they just said, everyone on Oxford, you know, we're no longer offering Oxford. You have to buy it directly from Oxford. And, you know, at this point, even understanding what your options are is extremely confusing and difficult. Yeah. I mean, the whole process of healthcare.
I think you're definitely listing some of the primary concerns of a lot of people who have used the Obamacare marketplaces. And yes, they're covered, but it can be extremely confusing. There's been a lot of churn in those marketplaces. So when you talk about getting kicked off your plans, I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about, but maybe some insurance companies exited the marketplace.
I'm pretty sure the freelancer's insurance plan he's talking about, they did exit the marketplace.
And then you're stuck having to choose something all over again, maybe switch doctors, face new doctors all over again. It has been the early years of this. We started exactly 3 years ago with the marketplaces, and they're still finding their footing. The insurers have still been trying to figure out how to price correctly, but it has been a big challenge for a lot of people to find a plan, keep a plan, keep doctors, and pay for it. So I think that's something that everybody, including Democrats, would like to work on and improve.
Well, there's something else in there that Mike mentioned, you know, is this just the mandatory nature of all of the reforms in, or many of the reforms in it and in the law. And I think this is one of the core objections that, you know, that Republicans have, and that Tom Price, who has been nominated to run HHS, nominated as Trump's health secretary, you know, he has said clearly that many of the, particularly the innovative delivery systems that you describe in your article, those are the things that he says these need to not be mandatory. That's his problem
right.
with them is that, sure, innovate, invite doctors into them, but don't force doctors and hospital systems upon it. We understand why the mandatory part is necessary for the insurance program, or why Democrats have argued that is because, you know, you have to spread risk around. But what about for this experimenting, innovating in the systems thing? Why is it necessary for it to be mandatory, or is it in your estimation?
Well, I think the Obama administration was thinking to really get traction and see if some of these changes are going to work and save money and improve health outcomes, you need as many doctors and hospitals in as possible. You can't have a piecemeal experiments here and there. And doctors, nobody likes change. Doctors don't like change. Doctors don't like regulations coming down from Washington. And Tom Price is a doctor and hates that kind of regulation. But I think the thinking was, if you don't do it on as widespread a basis as possible, you're never going to find out if it really works, and you're certainly never going to see the kind of large scale savings and improvements in healthcare that you are looking for.
Well, and as you said, anytime you're innovating, anytime you're disrupting, you need to give it time to work. It's an investment, right? It's
right.
Going to fail a few times first.
Right. And it might fail in some places and not others, but right. Definitely time is needed, and definitely buy-in from as many health systems as possible is needed.
Let's try Bernadette in Queens once again. Bernadette, are you there?
Hi. Sorry. I guess you guys didn't hear me before. Okay. As far as the Affordable Care Act, we have an office in Lower Manhattan, and it's very difficult for us to get paid.
You're
it's
a doctor.
It's also very difficult for us to get onto the plans. They don't accept a lot of us doctors as specialists. They have, yes, like they said, nurses, practitioners are taking it. There's too many people in the pot. Mm-hmm. They need to put more into educating the children that are growing up to be these adults that have bad eating habits, who are not doing enough to take care of themselves. There needs to be more education to prevent from adding more people into the healthcare system. And then the doctors, when it comes down to it, they're not accepting us. They're not letting us into the plan. They're making it so difficult for us to get in, and then you're not getting paid. So who wants to treat these patients when you're not getting paid and being overwhelmed?
Bernadette, to clarify, the they here are the insurance plans,
the insurance
in the marketplace.
Yes, I'm sorry. The insurance companies. And being in the Lower Manhattan area, we're seeing a lot of the Medicaid-type patients, and a lot of them are immigrants, but they're not the legal immigrants. They're illegal immigrants. So they have more benefit from the Affordable Care Act, but there's not enough doctors to treat them because the plans are not allowing enough doctors into it.
Well, I don't think immigrants who are here illegally are eligible for Medicaid.
I believe in New York State our Medicaid program is open to
it's a state by state
regardless
thing.
Status.
They are benefiting. Those are the ones that are getting all the health care benefits. They have everything from the new Affordable Care Act. But the problem is they come into clinics and they don't have doctors that can get into the plans to treat these people.
So just to pull things apart here, setting the question of immigrants and their status to the side, your frustration, Bernadette, is that as a provider, you can't really connect with these patients. There's no you want to take them, you can't take them because you can't get paid for them.
You can't get in the plan. So they come in, they have the cards, and now you have 10 people waiting, and you have to tell them all, I can't treat you because I'm not going to get paid for 10 people.
So they just patients just show up at your clinic without knowing, without realizing that the plan doesn't cover you guys.
There might be one or two doctors in the clinic because it's a multi-clinic.
I see.
So then they decide, oh, I'm here. Let me go see the eye doctor. But if you're not on the plan, you can't see these people. It's, you know, we're getting hit left and right, and you know, a couple of us have treated them and just you know that needed to be treated. But now it's like ridiculous. Because we're not getting paid. So the doctors are getting severely hurt by this.
Well, so Abby, within this, and please chime in if you have any insight on it, but I know one part of this that seems to come up in your story is, again, all of the incentives for providers to do something different, to innovate and change how they provide care.
Mm-hmm.
There is a concern that also could have a perverse incentive. It doesn't sound like this is what is happening for Bernadette, but could have doctors who say, well, I'm just not taking those patients because I'm not going to get paid for them. It's going to be too much rigmarole. These incentives for me to provide all kinds of new complicated care, I don't want the bother.
Right.
I mean, is that?
I think in my story, there was a doctor who he was just kind of theorizing, well, look, if I'm going to get penalized for not improving the health of patients who don't take care of themselves, I can just tell those patients I'm not going to see them anymore. And I guess theoretically that could happen. With Medicaid, it's my understanding that it's usually difficult for the Medicaid insurers to get doctors to opt into it because Medicaid doesn't pay very well comparatively. Yeah. Certainly with the exchange, the marketplace plans, we've seen what are called narrow networks where the plans use a very limited number of doctors and hospitals that agree to accept a probably lower payment from them. Mm-hmm. And don't want to work with other doctors and hospitals, particularly if they're not going to accept that lower fee. Yeah. I don't know what the case was here, but certainly the narrow network issue has been one of the big complaints about the Affordable Care Act.
From the beginning, the narrow networks has just been repeatedly a problem for folks. Let's go to David in Inwood. David, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Very well, very well. How are you? What's been your experience?
So my experience has been stellar with the Affordable Care Act. I'll have to say that I was able to go to a rehabilitation for a substance abuse problem with Obamacare. I'm actually having surgery tomorrow to have bariatric surgery to reverse diabetes and obesity. When people say that you were unable to keep your doctor, for me, that was the exact opposite. When I was working at a cable company, I had the same insurance that I had with Obamacare, and I kept the same doctor, and it was just a seamless transition from United Healthcare that I had with my employer and United Healthcare that I have with Obamacare. Another great thing about Obamacare is that there are no referrals in the system. I don't have to get a referral if I want to see a specialist, a urologist, or what have you. I can just go to that doctor and deal with them directly. And I find that the experience of Obamacare, I have United Healthcare, which was purchased on the marketplace, which I got seamlessly. In under 5 or 10 minutes, I was able to go to the website, get United Healthcare. I never have to wait on hold when I call them. They recognize my phone number. To me, Obamacare has been a breeze. And as I'm thinking about the list of reasons why I love it, I'm just so depressed that it's going to be gone, you know, potentially.
So it's so striking to me listening to your story. I just think about how I've traveled around the country for the past 3 years talking to so many people who have gotten some form of insurance under the law. And you hear such a range of experiences. I've definitely heard a number of people like you who sailed through enrollment, didn't have to lose your doctor, don't have to pay too much, have had access to all kinds of treatments. And then I've heard so many stories too about people who have been disappointed with the cost, with the sign-up process, with the premium increases, with what kind of access they've been able to get for care. And so much of it is so dependent on various, like where you live, what your income is, what kind of health system you have, what kind of insurance market you have in your county. It's all very kind of fateful. So much of your experience with the Affordable Care Act is dependent on your particular circumstances, and the next person's could be totally different.
And David, can I also ask you about, you mentioned at the beginning that you were able to get treatment for substance abuse problems. Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about that? Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's one of the things that Obama, you know, emphasized, that he would want to have that as because of the epidemic, you know, of substance abuse, heroin abuse, for example. That wasn't my experience, but because of this cost on the, you know, on the long term, on the health the health market for people that are overdosing, you know, I'm very grateful that I was able to go to a rehabilitation, as opposed to before, even when I had private insurance, they did not offer rehabilitation services. But under Obamacare, it is by mandate.
And you had tried and failed in the past?
I had tried and failed when I was working, yes, right. Under United Healthcare in the private market versus United Healthcare in the Obamacare market.
This is one of the parts of the law that I think has gone under discussed, Abby. I don't know how much you know about it. We did a piece here way back at the beginning of the rollout. And when we talked to a number of substance abuse treatment providers who suddenly had access to funding that they hadn't had before, are you able to talk about that at all and how that's changed?
Certainly, that's been a huge piece of the Medicaid expansion for sure, because not only did so many of the people who got Medicaid not have any health insurance before the ACA, they certainly didn't have access to substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment. And, you know, many states didn't cover that at all, or some in their Medicaid plans before ACA. State health officials will tell you just how many people have gone to substance abuse treatment since the ACA took effect. And it's really striking. States like Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, where you've seen the opioid crisis really, really have a horrible effect. I think a lot of people are getting substance abuse treatment. Now, how much and what kind is certainly going to vary. But the fact is that it exists and people have access that they didn't have before.
One thing I want to make sure we talk about that comes up in your story, getting back to Medicaid, and that certainly is part of the substance abuse treatment story as well, but is that, you know, you were in Indiana looking at a system that expanded under Mike Pence's guidance. And there's good reason to believe that the way he put together the Medicaid system there is going to be the future of Medicaid under the Trump administration, given mm-hmm. that the person who is nominated to run the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services is the same person who ran Mike Pence's Medicaid program in Indiana. Can you quickly explain for us what is the innovation there that Pence and other Republican governors were doing in order to accept a Medicaid expansion?
This is what Republican governors love to call the personal responsibility approach to Medicaid, in which most of people in the Medicaid program's care is paid for by Medicaid and the state, but there is at least a small financial obligation that the patient has, either in terms of a premium, a monthly premium. It may just be like a dollar a month. It may be $10 a month. It's usually not much more than that. Or in terms of copays and for doctor's visits and medication. So the idea is, if you have more skin in the game, you're going to be more judicious about what and thoughtful about what healthcare you use, whether you show up in the emergency room, because that could cost you out of your own pocket if you use emergency care when you don't really need it. So the idea is just to make people more aware of what they're spending on healthcare. And yes, I think that if we see Medicaid, we're going to see Medicaid continue, but I think we're likely to see more and more of this type of demand made of Medicaid recipients to pay out a little for their care.
And this was something the Obama administration welcomed, right? They invited Republican governors, listen,
yeah,
you can take the Medicaid, do it your way, come up with this new system.
Right. It wasn't Obama's model. I think that, you know, traditional Medicaid pays for just about everything. You may have a couple dollars here or there for medicine or doctor visit copays, but you certainly don't have premiums. But Obama basically said, however you want to do it, as long as it meets certain standards, you're welcome to do it and innovate. And we'll work with you as long as you jump in and do this Medicaid expansion. So it wasn't only Mike Pence in Indiana. It was John Kasich in Ohio. It was Rick Snyder in Michigan, who actually has spoken out this week about how he hopes to keep the Medicaid expansion, even if Obamacare goes away. A bunch of Republican governors did it, and Seema Verma helped at least a few of them design those personal responsibility plans. And I do think it's going to be something we see more and more in the future of Medicaid.
Seema Verma ran the Medicaid program in Indiana, nominated to run the Medicaid program nationally under the Trump administration. We will leave it there. We are going to have a great many conversations, I'm sure, about the future of the healthcare system now that it is back up for debate in Congress. Abby Goodenough of the New York Times. Look for her article, The Healthcare Revolution, published on Monday as part of the Times series on the Obama era. Abby, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Up next, the Cuomo de Blasio feud enters the national political debate.